right now, our featured guest for today, a second part in our series on innovation in science and technology, also the frontiers of science. Tom Chikanowski joins us all the way from Winona, Minnesota. Welcome, Tom. Good to have you back today.
Good afternoon again.
And I bet you didn't think you were going to be sitting in this chair twice just by giving me a phone call.
It wasn't on the itinerary a couple of days ago.
But it is now. I always like to sit you down in front of a mic whenever I can because you expand my thoughts about science, technology, about life on Earth, cosmology and the universe. You're one of the most radical thinkers and innovators that I know. And, you know, I like radicals. I mean, I don't necessarily agree with everything you say, but that's not the point. You make me think, and that is the point. Yesterday, we talked about a lot of aspects, and one of the most exciting things we talked about was an energy collection and conversion device that you discovered by accident that you then recreated, tested, and discovered actually produced more energy than, or operated at above unity. Let me use the correct language here. Was that right?
Right.
Okay.
We get more energy out than we put in, which is supposedly against the law of physics. So there must be a source for that energy somewhere. And this is where the radical view of science comes in, trying to identify the source.
So, first of all, just recap the story, because this is a really cool story. Where did you first find this circuitry that is part of this exciter that works with these resonant coils?
Well, it started with a project to just explore, with an open mind, different types of coils. Dr. John Maluski had been priming my mind with other people's research and devices, and so I decided to have a go at it myself. So I went up and worked with my cousin, who was a first-class radio engineer, who has lots of equipment, and set up a little corner in his shop. And I started winding coils and just putting signals on them, measuring their impedance, measuring their output. As a load, I used a couple of fluorescent lights. So we're taking the output of these coils and powering fluorescent lights, and we were stimulating the coils with a RF generator.
And that's a radio frequency generator.
Radio frequency generator.
Kind of like a transmitter, but without a tower, in a sense?
Well, yes, indeed. We could literally take the output of that and hook it to an antenna and transmit a signal. It's that type of a device.
But instead you hooked it to a coil and with the idea of lighting a light bulb.
Right, with the idea of lighting a light bulb. And when we did the math, it appeared that more energy was coming out than we were putting in. It just looked good, but the frequency I was operating at was right in the middle of the AM band, so that's not allowed by the FCC. So I started to wind coils with the goal of getting down into the audio range.
Mm-hmm.
And when I hit about a half a megacycle, I needed to switch to a different generator, audio generator.
We're getting too technical here, Tommy. I'm starting to lose it here. But there is a special exciter circuit that you discovered in an RF generator itself.
Well, basically, when we put the second unit on, the circuit failed.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And then I went back to see what there was in the first unit that might have made the circuit work, whereas the second one didn't, and they were virtually
close to identical
as far as the oscilloscope mm-hmm. was concerned. The oscilloscope was seen identical.
And that's a measuring device.
That's one of the measuring devices, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like a television set. But although the scope said identical, the coil said different. And so I got a schematic for the unit and started analyzing the circuits inside of it. And I found that there was an oscillator circuit in the device that was not listed in any of the textbooks, any of the reference books, any of the engineering books that we had.
It was like a phantom circuit.
Well, I don't know how phantom it is. It was brilliantly simple, and it's why isn't everybody using this one type of thing?
But nobody had ever seen something like that before. I mean, you couldn't find a reference for that circuit anywhere.
In print, no. This was a patented device. The device is well distributed. There are thousands of them around the world.
But there was this magic circuit, a magic oscillator in there.
Magic little oscillator circuit in there that I replicated on the outside. And
the rest is history.
The rest is history.
As they say. Our guest on The Journey Home today is innovator and research scientist Tommy Chikanowski, and we're talking now, moving into the discussion of what it is that is enabling this device to operate, this coil, this resonant coil and oscillator, to operate over unity. And just to recap real quickly for our listeners, describe the concept of unity and why that's important to physicists, and why when you operate, you're almost always, or at least in modern understandings of physics, you are operating at something less than one in unity.
Well, right. Normally, a transformer is two coils that are coupled together. And basically, these resonant coils are transformers also.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if we have a power transformer out on the telephone pole outside,
yeah,
we would expect, if we put in 100 watts, to get about 97 out again, because there are some losses from heat and magnetic flux movement. But on these resonant coils, if we put in one unit of energy, we can get 6 to 350. I've even had one circuit register 3,000 times more power out than we were putting in.
And of course, this is completely impossible.
Of course, that's completely impossible.
Any physicist who, you know, is part of the system will tell you that is just not going to happen. And if it is happening, then you've got something wrong in your measuring device. Or you've got a, you know, some wires under the counter that are altering the effect. Or
that's what people would say, but yeah, we are the boys that keep communication happening. We do the radio transmitters and
mm-hmm.
zero in all those satellites up there so you can all listen to them. And so we have to deal with reality, and we have the test equipment to do it.
So you weren't interested in theoretical, oh, this is impossible, therefore it can't be happening, let's move on. You said, wow, what's this?
Yeah, I'm a tinkerer, so
yeah. So you wanted to find out what was going on here. And like you said yesterday, energy can neither be created nor destroyed, only captured, collected, transformed.
Correct.
From one form into another form. And so you started looking for the source of this extra energy that was allowing this oscillator circuit to operate over unity.
Actually, I was primed for this earlier.
Yeah.
Dr. John Maluski, a couple years earlier, had mm-hmm. presented the concept to me that, hey, maybe gravity is not an attractive force, maybe it's a push force, and maybe there is a real dynamic ether or a medium that interconnects all of creation, and that this is a super dynamic, super energetic field that we can tap into. And
wow, you just said a lot here. Wait a minute, before the end, let me just see if I can understand what you're saying. Dr. Maluski suggested that gravity was not a pulling force, but a pushing force, and that this then created a theoretical framework that would explain, in a sense, the extra energy that this circuit was capturing and converting.
It gave us an engineering premise.
Okay.
And then my job was to build on that premise and find the ballpark where this phenomenon could be capitalized on.
Okay.
And we did. We found the ballpark, and we now know what things we have to work on, how to engineer a better system, and that's where we're at now, is improving the design.
No, unfortunately, you didn't hit a home run the first time. You ran into some trouble with some measuring apparatus because the experimenter and the devices measuring these circuits were actually affecting the operations of the circuits.
Well, there's a number of things that I ran into right away. As soon as you hook an oscilloscope up to the unit would stop working, until I had retuned the circuit to account for the properties of the test leads and the device that I hooked up to it. So all of a sudden, when you add a measuring device, it becomes part of the circuit. So the mere act of observing here is interfering with the operation of the unit. So here's an instant where the observer is affecting the operation.
So you figured out a fix for this, a way of indirectly measuring this without putting a measuring device actually in the circuit. And how did you do that?
Well, one method is, instead of measuring power output, we measure lumen output from the light bulbs.
Lumens, light.
Right. And when necessary to have a test instrument in there, we treat the test instrument as a component of the system and make it a valid working component. So that way the test instrument can take a peak that's relatively accurate.
Uh-huh. And so you basically were able to validate your premise using the lumens as a way to measure. And so you're on your way to developing a device that essentially can produce more energy than it consumes. That once you turn it on, it will basically operate without an external source of energy. Is that right?
That's correct, yes.
Sounds like magic to me, Tommy.
Well, it's still a little magic until we start getting our engineering formulas, and then it'll be science well known instead of science not yet understood.
Our guest on the Journey Home today is Tom Chikanowski, and we're going to take a quick break. Boy, I need a break right now to sort of process all the stuff we've just heard.